The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of New Mexico.
We're here on the matter of Chavez Asuna SC 41313. You may state your appearance and begin your argument.
Actually, before you go, how much time have you reserved for rebuttal?
10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead.
May it please the court, Joseph Gonzalez on behalf of the disciplinary board. A specification of charges was filed in this matter in September of 2025. Subsequently, respondent Gene Chavez and the disciplinary council entered into a consent agreement wherein Mr. Chavez agreed not to contest the factual basis as alleged in the specification of charges, as well as the conclusions of law that he violated Rule 16301, Rule 16305, Rule 16802, and Rule 16804. As reflected in the hearing committee's recommendation accepting the consent agreement, at the hearing, Mr. Chavez expressed remorse for the conduct and acknowledged that he violated the rules of professional conduct as alleged in the specification of charges. In determining what the appropriate sanction for Mr. Chavez based on the alleged misconduct, we are guided by the ABA standards for imposing lawyer sanctions. And absent aggravating or mitigating factors, the appropriate sanction for this type of misconduct would be a formal reprimand or a suspension. Because Mr. Chavez had substantial experience in the practice of law, having first been licensed in 1999, in addition to the aggravating factor of prior discipline from 2011, 2012, we felt that a suspension would be the appropriate sanction. However, in considering the mitigating factors that Mr. Chavez cooperated with the disciplinary process, that the prior discipline occurred 15 years prior, and that he expressed remorse regarding the conduct, we believe that a deferred suspension was the appropriate sanction.
Counsel, you said that there was prior disciplinary issues both in 2011 and 2012?
The conduct at issue occurred in 2010 and 2011, I believe. It came before the court in 2011 and 2012.
And in that particular instance, was there expression of remorse?
In the prior discipline, no. In fact, one of the findings was in the prior disciplinary cases that they did not believe that he, they believed that he made false statements, and they didn't believe that he sufficiently expressed remorse in those cases.
Thank you.
What's your reasoning for recommending unsupervised as opposed to supervised?
Generally, with supervised probation, we recommend that sanction in situations where there's a competence issue or if they have less experience in practicing law. In this situation, because it involved, the conduct mainly involved, a frivolous motion as well as making false or with reckless disregard statements regarding the integrity of the judge. We didn't really see a benefit in adding supervised probation in that situation. I wouldn't really see how reports from a supervising attorney would prevent this type of situation from occurring again.
Okay, and then why unsupervised as opposed to a reprimand or also having a formal reprimand?
There really wasn't a basis that we decided, that it would be appropriate to receive a censure again, since he was previously censured by this court. Again, we thought that the proper sanction was the suspension in this case. But because mitigating factors were present, we believe that the deferred would be.
Counsel, since this was an agreed upon settlement, if we were to reject the proposed discipline, what would happen next?
It would have to go before a hearing, before the hearing committee.
And you would remand it back for a hearing?
Yes, and all statements that would be taken today from Mr. Chavez or that were taken at the consent hearing regarding, you know, his admissions would not be admissible.
Okay, thank you.
Is it within our purview to modify? Or do we have to remand for a full hearing?
Rule 17211, subsection C, specifically states that if the agreement is not accepted by the hearing committee, the disciplinary board, or the Supreme Court, that it would be have to go before a full hearing.
Okay, thank you.
I don't see any language in that provision.
Okay, thank you.
Did you do any investigation into the allegations made in the motion to strike reply?
Mr. Chavez's, we reviewed his answer, as well as Judge Allison's complaint. I did speak with Mr. Eli and Mr. Hewliston as well.
Did you find a basis in law or fact for the following statement? Plaintiffs made an error in the form of subpoena. Presumably, Hewliston and Eli have thumbed their noses at the 15-day rule of reply and seemingly rely on the notion that their old buddy from Sheehan will not do anything. Did you find any basis in law or fact for that statement?
Absolutely none.
Any basis in law and fact for the statement upon information and belief? I don't even know what that means when you make a statement like this. It is the association, friendship, or level of comfort with this court that Eli and his counsel, so both the court and opposing counsel, do not have any compunction with following a reply over 2 months after a response was filed.
There was no basis in law or fact. And as well, the consent agreement did include that, those particular findings, that there was no basis in law for those statements.
What matter of expressed remorse would mitigate an allegation that a judge's relationship, which we have acknowledged there's no basis in law or fact, how would that mitigate it?
He did express, regret that he'd made those statements.
I'm talking about mitigation in the sense of the impact of the statement, both to the judge and to the people sitting in the courtroom, perhaps, that are hearing or reading a statement like that and wondering, am I here? Is this a fair tribunal? How does it mitigate that?
What weight we give the aggravating and mitigating factors, that's up to the tribunal to decide. But it is a factor.
Counsel, was there any apology to Judge Allison or to counsel that these false statements or statements that had no basis in fact were made against them?
I believe that in the underlying hearing at the motion to strike, I do believe that Mr. Chavez did express remorse at that time.
Did Judge Allison impose any sanctions?
Regarding this particular, I don't know offhand whether, and I know he did sanction Mr. Chavez in the case previously, but I don't know if he was sanctioned, because I know shortly after that hearing, Judge Allison did file the disciplinary complaint against Mr. Chavez.
I understand that, but okay. Thank you.
I believe that the case was pending at the time. I don't know offhand what the ultimate outcome of that case was.
If we were to suspend and defer as is recommended in the petition, will the public understand why? I'm thinking of teachable moments.
I agree. I believe so. I mean, I do believe that this is a serious misconduct on behalf of Mr. Chavez, and we didn't consider this sanction lightly. The most analogous case to to this was...
That's not what I'm suggesting, but like with a formal reprimand, it gets published and there's a full description of the bad behavior and don't do this. With suspension and deferral of that suspension is such a missive made public to the bar.
Yeah, I agree. I think that probably it would not, without something, probably without a formal or probably another public censure, I'm not sure if the public would appreciate the gravity of the expenses.
Thank you.
It looks like you're out of time, counsel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your honors, may it please the court, and I really want to answer your questions. This is not typical of being in front of you where there's not an issues presented or any briefing, but I do want to try to address from my side some of your questions.
Will you enter your appearance, please?
Marshall Ray on behalf of the respondent. Thank you, Judge, for reminding me. But I want to kind of run through the questions you all had been asking of my counterpart. You had referenced the issue of mitigation. Justice Thompson pointed out how are you mitigating if you express remorse, if perhaps you've implicated the impartiality of the tribunal. And Your Honor, it's a situation where correcting the record by admitting that your statement was wrong is probably the most important thing you can do, and that's what he's done here with this consent decree. He's made those admissions of fact in that consent decree, and that is the first step, and a very important step in telling the public, telling the tribunal, telling Judge Allison, I was wrong about that, Judge.
And I appreciate your advocacy. I want to present this in the context of that. I read 301 a little differently, and you can tell me whether you disagree. And maybe I think more of Rule 11, the senior justice is describing. I understood my role as a lawyer before I said it, I need a basis in law or fact. I can't say it and then apologize about it. I know we're under... It's tough for you because if we decide against this, you've still got to try the facts. But I don't see anything in the record that at the time the statement was made, there was any investigation, any quote, air quotes, of good faith that the statement I read to opposing counsel was at all based on fact. It's okay to say I apologize, but I think the role of the lawyer is if you show me something that you think there's some good faith basis, this is based on law or fact, okay with the apology when you end up wrong. But do you read 301 that way?
Your Honor, I believe that 301, our agreement is in harmony with 301 because... As I said, there's the after the fact, there's the taking back of the statement. But in addition to that, it allows for the idea that when you're talking about discipline, there is a discipline here proposed in this. He's not being told by the disciplinary board and the council, oh, no harm, no foul, everybody walks away. Instead, there is a discipline that he agreed to. And I would submit that a suspension, even if it's deferred, goes on your license. I'm in the process of applying for a law license in another state right now, and they're very searching about questions such as, have you ever been disciplined before? Please explain the circumstances. It has a professional impact on a person going forward forever. So that's why I think 301 contemplates a situation where there are gradations of what you have done and said. And yes, if you didn't do an investigation and you made an assertion of fact without doing the proper investigation, you may be disciplined and in this situation, this is the appropriate discipline.
So I want to go back to the premise of Justice Thompson's inquiry, which is this kind of statement of remorse, which isn't found in the findings of fact that are before the court. What paragraph 11 says is that at the February 27th, 2025 hearing, respondent on the record attempted to excuse his statement made within the motion to strike reply as being made upon information and belief, as being directed toward the motivations of Eli Hewlison and then not the court. That's not really an apology. That's saying, well, I did this on information and belief, trying to put it in the category of good faith. But you can't just make wild accusations about a judge and then wipe it away with, well, on information and belief. I'm really, to me, this is a much bigger deal than what is being presented to me by way of pleadings. Because that's not a statement of remorse. That's still trying to excuse behavior.
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying. And I don't have a transcript. I may have the transcript, but I don't know if I can point to it. But he made a statement which I believe, you know, had more remorse in it. And also, I would submit, Your Honor, to your point, which is a fair point, if he needs to make a more satisfactory or clear statement of apology and remorse, I would request that he be given the opportunity to do that today. He is here and he is ready to answer your questions.
It's not remorse to me or to the five of us. It's a statement of apology to Judge Allison and and Mr. Hewlison and Mr. Eli. Because what he did was concoct out of thin air this alleged conflict of interest. And then he doesn't, because I'm limited by the findings of fact in front of us.
Sure.
There's no statement of remorse in that. It's another attempt to excuse behavior. And so it's not apologizing to us, although, you know, that kind of remorse is important. It's that I don't believe, at least based on what's been presented to us, that there's a statement to Judge Allison saying, Your Honor, I'm really sorry that I impugned your integrity without any basis. That, to me, is what's important here.
Well, that's a fair statement, Your Honor. And Mr. Chavez is willing to make a statement like that. But I was under the impression, and my instruction to him was not to communicate to Judge Allison. But I see that there's some setting that it could be something directly communicated to
Judge
Allison.
If I were in your shoes, I would have given him the same instructions.
Did I say Josh? And I apologize if
I
did.
No, you didn't.
Okay.
I would have given my client the same instruction, but there's no finding of fact here that shows that remorse.
I understand, Your Honor. I was going to address a few more of your previous questions, and if you all would talk louder, because I'm having trouble hearing. And it may just be me, and I won't take it as you yelling at me.
Okay. I think that's right.
Thank you.
Although you may have cause to. I want to talk about, you had also referenced the prior discipline. I agree with you. I do not know what sort of statements he made in the conduct of the investigation and the hearings of that. I have the Supreme Court opinion that discusses those matters in depth. And I've viewed that prior discipline as maybe only somewhat helpful in this proceeding because, first of all, it was a long time ago. It's more than a decade ago, or, you know, 14, 15 years ago was the conduct. And I also viewed a lot of that discipline as arising out of somebody who was trying to handle a volume practice and sort of getting underwater and getting into some tight situations there and trying to get himself out of those situations. And that put him in that discipline. Whereas here, it was in the rough and tumble of litigation, I could see looking in what's in the record, that he's starting to get frustrated. It's a pretty contentious litigation. And then he fires off this brief that we all, he and everybody else that's involved in this, regrets. But, you know, it was this, you know, in the zealous advocacy of his case and trying to win his case and get procedural correction of what he saw as procedural errors going on in the case. So it's a different situation, but at the same time, it implicates a person's ability to self-regulate, behave professionally, and then address their colleagues on the opposite side, and then, of course, the bench in the appropriate way. So that's why, you know, we felt and we crafted this discipline the way it is, because again, it is a discipline. I also think that the justice's point is well taken regarding, okay, well, does the public know that something happened here? My understanding is that even if there is not some, the court called it a missive, and I don't have a better word for that, of, you know, the details of what happened, the public does know that an attorney was suspended. And the general perception, in at least my understanding in the bar, is that a suspension with a deferral is more serious than a reprimand. And so I don't think that the public or the bar or the bench or another jurisdiction takes it lightly to know that a person was suspended.
I was trying to get at something different, counsel, which is there is an educational opportunity here. We are now in this increasingly hyperbolic world where these kinds of allegations are bandied about judges every single day. And by not having something that is descriptive, it doesn't teach other lawyers, like, you ought not do that because we take it very seriously. That's what I was trying to get at. And by doing, I get that a suspension is more grave than
yes.
a public reprimand. I agree with you there, but in that teachable moment to the rest of the New Mexico bar, or even attorneys who are coming in pro hoc, which I get lots of complaints about their conduct, to be like, nobody's allowed to do this, not just Mr. Chavez. Nobody's allowed to do this. So that's what I was aiming at with opposing counsel.
Okay, well, that's a fair point too. And I don't remember what goes into the publication of a deferred suspension.
That's
so
why I asked
that's
the
a
question,
fair point.
So.
I apologize that I don't have a better information
okay.
on that. And so, Your Honor, I came in today wanting to also comment on the process. Because I believe that it worked appropriately in this case. It was an adversarial process where a complaint is filed. It's investigated by the folks at disciplinary counsel. They come forward with a specification of charges, and then there's some briefing done. I filed a brief, at least, kind of a trial brief type document, which Your Honors probably saw. And then it then became a collaborative process as the parties were conferring and trying to reach an outcome that protected the public, disciplined the attorney, but also was something that wasn't an overreach and wasn't unfair. The original proposal in the specification, I believe, was disbarment. And so we all worked hard together following that process. And that entailed him making admissions and agreeing to take this discipline on his record and the impact that it entails. And it also was a reflection. I can't speak for the disciplinary board and disciplinary council, but I believe it probably reflects on their own view of the fairness of it and what could ultimately be proved at a hearing. So that's a process that is a very good one. It worked well for everybody to do that. And I think that that's the way it's intended to work, so that every single discipline case isn't a long, dragged out hearing process and the resources. Did you have a question, Your
yes,
Honor?
Yes.
I want to stop talking and let you okay. ask the question.
The question is, were Judge Allison, Mr. Houston, or Mr. Eli consulted with regard to this settlement agreement?
And I would not know that. And I took great pains not to attempt to communicate or contact with them. But that might be a question to refer back to my colleague when he comes on his rebuttal. But we would have had, you know, I would have been fine with them being consulted. I do a lot of criminal defense, and it is routine, in fact, required in certain types of cases for you know, the victims to actually agree to or at least be consulted on plea agreements. So in this case, that's a long-winded way for me saying I don't know if they were consulted or not.
And I do have a comment. I find it's interesting to me that a public admonishment carries less weight than a deferred, unsupervised suspension. One is public, one is just kind of private. And as far as what Justice Bacon refers to as teachable moments, it seems to me a teachable moment is something public that goes out not only to the bar at large, but to the public at large. So anyway, it's just an observation, me just thinking out loud.
Well, it's an interesting observation because the teachable moment is important, but in the context of discipline, you know, where the respondent is sort of at the center of it, having a suspension on your record, even deferred, it impacts your marketability, your career, your profitability as a law firm more than the reprimand does. And I mean, most of the time. So but from a public perspective, I can see where reprimands are more, they carry a policy objective that doesn't just relate to the respondent. But from the respondent standpoint, that's all I was trying to say. And then Your Honors, I was going to go through the ABA standards regarding all of the mitigating and the aggravating circumstances, but I don't want to be repetitive. I feel like disciplinary counsel was pretty effective in going through those. So I have 3 minutes left. If there are any other questions from me, I'd like to open myself up again. But also, if there was any opportunity that the court wanted to hear from Mr. Chavez, he is here, Your Honors. And it has been my experience that usually the court does like to hear from the respondent. So,
does he have anything he'd like to express?
If it pleases the court, Your Honors.
That's fine. If he'd like to address this, he may.
Good morning, Justices. I'd like to just touch on a few things. I paid a pretty big price for what happened in 2011, 2012. I was suspended for 90 days, and it's a scarlet letter I still carry. None of the allegations or issues have come forward again. Nothing like that.
Actually, Mr. Chavez, I apologize. Because you are not counsel in this case, I should have sworn you in.
Oh, no problem.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Please proceed.
I do. I'll talk a little louder, too, because I know that I may be a little soft-spoken. I learned my lesson dearly. Richard Pfefferman was my supervising attorney for, I believe, over a year. And so the problems I had with a high volume practice were addressed. I think the finding was a negligent misrepresentation. What I did was I put in an affidavit what I believed happened instead of verifying it. And so it was negligent misrepresentation, not intentional. I want to make that distinction because I think it's important. It was an error I made that I have not made since. Here I have a very, very small caseload. I carry less than 10 cases. I don't practice full time. I think there was a comedy of errors that occurred in this particular case why we're here on all parties. And rather than go through the extensive litigation to bring forth a lot of facts and issues, I'm willing to take this discipline. I fully understand what happened. I fully understand what the concerns of this court are, and I fully understand what the concerns of the public would be. You know, my frustration in the case was I didn't understand how attorneys who've been practicing 20-something years could file a reply 90 days late with absolutely no compunction and with impunity. It was mind-blowing to me. I had to wait 9 months for an order on a motion to amend. And instead of going through all those issues, instead of creating more work, I happily stood forward and just accepted. And I'm happy to do what Mr. Ray has recommended. I'm happy to follow the recommendations and guidelines of the disciplinary board. I think that I've been practicing 27 years, and I can't recall a time in which any of what I've put into a pleading has been called into question. I could be wrong, but I don't remember anything like that happening. So this is the first time something like that has happened. I certainly understand the ramifications of what I said, and I did apologize in my responses to the disciplinary board. So when they did send out the complaints, my response was I apologized profusely to Judge Allison. I indicated that I would happy to put a notice of errata. I would do a whatever pleading would satisfy the court. It was my questions as to how learned counsel could carelessly, recklessly, and intentionally just file a late pleading without any explanation or without even a motion for leave. And perhaps I reached, but that's not important. What's important is I accept responsibility for making that statement. And I certainly understand that the public needs to be able to trust the judiciary, and so any other issues that I may have with something that's going on, it would be better taken up in a different type of pleading or a different type of scenario, not putting as a off-the-collar comment as to why I think opposing counsel did what they did, even though I think everyone in this room could agree it was inappropriate. So my inappropriate actions don't justify or excuse inappropriate actions that were done previously, and I fully understand that.
Anything else?
No, Your Honor, and our time is up.
Thank you. Mr. Gonzalez.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I want to address Justice V. Hill's inquiry regarding the weight given to a public censure or reprimand as opposed to a deferred suspension. With a deferred suspension always comes the possibility of revocation of that sanction, which could result in ultimately up to disbarment. And then I also want to address a couple of...
Real quick, we could have done, or not we, you all could have done both though, right? You could have had a deferred suspension and a public reprimand?
Yes, we could. But again, the ABA standards for this particular misconduct, the appropriate sanction would be either a reprimand or a suspension. Because of the aggravating factors, we felt that the suspension was appropriate. I'm not sure if it would be appropriate to give him two sanctions for the same conduct.
Well, Mr. Gonzalez, let me ask you this. You indicated earlier that we have to either accept or reject this recommendation. Can we remand it for reconsideration of other matters? Is there anything that prohibits that?
The way Rule 17211, subsection C, reads is that if it's not accepted, then any statements made by Mr. Chavez in relation to any of these proceedings are not admissible.
I understand that. But my question is a little bit different. Could we, well, we're not limited to either accept or reject.
I believe the reading of the rule means you are limited to
but
either.
The matter could be remanded and the two parties could get together and come to a different agreement.
That is always an option, yes. And that would also bring me to address a couple of inquiries by Justice Bacon. So one would be the teachable moment. This court always has the option of publishing an opinion, even with consent agreements. That could be the public portion of making sure that the public is protected and that the public also is aware of the seriousness of these allegations. And then additionally...
But under that, is that adding a condition?
It's not adding. If the court accepts the consent agreement, it could still issue its an opinion regarding that where it makes its concerns known.
I'm sorry, I'm having
It could still issue an opinion where it makes its concerns known, but I don't believe that an opinion is adding to the discipline.
Okay. Do you think the bar needs to be taught? Let's talk about the teachable moment, and then I'd like to talk about the mitigation factors. Do you believe the bar needs to be educated that they can't make a factual representation in a pleading that a judge was from a firm he was not from, and that relationship, which is provably false, impacted or may impact the decision? Is that something in your world, because you're closer to it, that the bar needs to be taught? Or is that something you learn?
I believe
when you take your ethics class in law school, or you review Rule 1011.
It's not an issue that we see. It's not a common issue.
Okay.
I believe it's actually the second point, that this is something that, you know, you learn in ethics, or which is why that's why we believe that the conduct itself, that the suspension would be appropriate.
Can I ask, you keep talking about the ABA standards and you cite 6.12, 6.22, 6.32
yes.
of the ABA standards. Do those specifically recommend deferred suspension for 6 months, or are they recommending suspension from the practice of law? Because I see that distinction to be significant. One prohibits you from representing clients and practicing law if you're suspended, versus the other is you're on unsupervised probation. You can still practice, but no violations for the next 6 months. I just see those. I think that distinction is significant, at least in my mind.
Yes. The ABA standards don't include things such as recommendations for time limits, I mean, amount of time for suspensions. It doesn't mention anything regarding deferrals. It just very basically says absent mitigating or aggravating factors, the appropriate sanction would be suspension, formal reprimand, depending, and then it can go down to admonishment or it just really depends on what the actual findings. In this case, because there was the statements were made either with the knowledge that they were false or with reckless disregard to the truth or the falsity, in addition with the aggravating factor of the prior discipline and his substantial experience in the law, that's why we stepped it up from a formal reprimand to actual suspension.
Can I ask about the experience in law mitigation? Curious about that. I would think that experience in law would actually maybe cut against you, because with enough experience, I could see a young lawyer maybe not necessarily doing this, but making mistakes.
Oh, absolutely.
So which way does that cut?
The substantial experience of the law is an aggravating factor. It's not a mitigating. The mitigating factors in this matter were his expressing remorse and his cooperation with this process. And that brings me to a point that Justice Bacon inquired of Mr. Chavez's counsel, where she stated that the factor wasn't a factual finding by the hearing committee. In their recommendation on page 2, they do point out that Mr. Chavez was questioned, detailed by us and by myself, in addition to the committee, and that he did express remorse and understand, acknowledge that he did make those statements without the factual basis.
And to be clear, remorse is always very, very important, and I understand why that's a factor that was strongly considered. But there's nothing in the record below at the district court level that showed any taking of responsibility, is there?
No. Mr. Chavez, in his statements that he's always made to us, is that he did apologize at that hearing. And he, as Mr. Ray did indicate, he did indicate to us that he would apologize to Judge Allison if needed be. But that's not really a sanction that, you know, is recommended by us. It's not part of the ABA. standards.
Just as another teachable moment for the disciplinary board, prefatory language in a conditional agreement does not a finding of fact.
Yes, I understand.
And going forward, if there is actual statements of remorse and apology, they should probably be in the findings of fact, because that's what governs our decision making. I recognize you're not the drafter here, but I think that would be a more appropriate way to reflect what those facts are.
I agree. And it is included in our consent as a fact, as a mitigating factor, that he has expressed remorse.
Mr. Gonzalez, I'll ask you the question I asked of Mr. Ray. Were Judge Allison, Mr. Heelson, or Mr. Eli consulted with regard to this agreement?
As far as consulted, I did communicate to each of those gentlemen that our position would always be a suspension as the appropriate sanction.
Was there any objection?
I didn't consult to them whether or not they thought that was appropriate. I didn't.
Did they express an objection?
I didn't hear back from Judge Allison. Mr. Eli did indicate, he didn't express that he was like objecting to it, but he did make known what he felt was the appropriate sanction.
He made note of what he...
What he believed was...
And what did he believe that was?
He believed it would be disbarment. I have less than 30 seconds. Is any other questions of me or...
No. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we will take this matter under advisement. If you will stay in the courtroom, we will try and come to a decision right now. If we are unable to, we will let our chief clerk know and she will come in and tell you, but please stay close. The court will be in recess.
And court, please.
Please. You may be seated. So the court has considered the argument of the parties, and thank you for your written materials and for your arguments today. The court has unanimously decided that it will not accept the recommendation of the board. Under Rule 17.211, the court is required to remand or upon approval of the agreement with, agreement of the parties, we can modify the recommendation. So we're going to propose a modification. Mr. Chavez, you will have 24 hours to decide whether you want to accept the modification or whether you want the case remanded for a hearing in front of the disciplinary board. The modification requires a one-year suspension, full suspension, no deferment, and we base that because we have precedent in that case. And in Ray Marshall, similar statements were made. He was suspended for a year. He ended up being suspended for another year or disbarred eventually, but based on the similar statements, there was a one-year suspension. We will also require a public apology that would be published in the bar bulletin to both Judge Allison and to the lawyers involved, and the court will write an opinion. And in reaching our decision, I have to say that we were not persuaded by the comments about Mr. Chavez's remorsefulness. He said that perhaps he overreached, not I made a mistake, I overreached. It was perhaps, maybe I did. And then when he came up and spoke with us, he continued to complain about the lawyers, which really caused the court concern that there is not genuine remorsefulness here. So we were not willing to accept the proposal of the disciplinary board and the agreement of the parties. So the court will stand in recess, but we will await a response from you, Mr. Marshall, tomorrow before noon, letting us know whether the modifications are accepted or whether Mr. Chavez prefers to remand and go back to the disciplinary board. Are there questions? Yes.
I have a question. In what form does the court want that response? Did they get a notice to the court?
Yes, please. Anything else? The court will be in recess. Thank you.
And the court, please.